Where we began last week, we started the halachas of muktzah, and when we discussed the inyanim of muktzah, we started first of all with a discussion about whether or not muktzah is a din d'oraisa or only a din midirabanan. The simple understanding of all the gemaras, all the sugyas, is that muktzah is only an iser midirabanan. That's clear. However, there are certain times where we find that muktzah is a d'oraisa, and where are those times? For example, if you have nolad, if you have something which is totally created from new, on Shabbos or Yom Tov, that would be considered Muksa de'oraisa. That's the discussion that we had last week, the Chasam Sofer, and we talked about that at length, what the difference would be if something is Asar Midiraisa Midirabanan. But certainly, if we understand that general Muksa is only Asar Midirabanan, that is a strange phenomenon that we find in the Gemara and Beitza, that a Safek Muksa will be Asar. Why should we assume that a Safek Muksa is Asar, if in fact we know that every time we have a Safek Dirabanan, we always go Lakula? So the Magen Mishnah gives two explanations as to why that might be the case. Number one, says the Magen Mishnah, there's always an exception to the rule. Yes, it's true that generally Safek Dirabanan Lakula. However, this, because the Chachamim wanted everybody to be really careful about Muktzah, because it's very easy to violate it, therefore they were Machmir, and they said even a Safek Muktzah is going to be Usr, even though it's only Midirabanan. That's answer number one. Answer number two that we discussed is perhaps the reason why Muktzah is different is because it's a Davar Sheyesh L'Matir, and just wait till Shabbos is over, and then it's going to be permissible. And we got into a discussion about whether or not that would be in the category of a davar sheyesh l'matir or not, because it's something that I want to be metaltal now. It's something I want to be metaltal again later. It's something I want to have 100 tiltulim for. Maybe the only time we say davar sheyesh l'matir is when you have a food item, as we discussed last week. For those who may not have been here, the shir is on our website. So now let's move a little bit further. What was the reason? What was the impetus for the Chachamim in the times of Nehemiah, in the times of David HaMelech? However you're going to learn whether David is the one who was Misakin or Nehemiah was Misakin, but why is it that they came up with this idea of instituting a violation of Muktzah on Shabbos? What compelled them to do that? Well, the Gemara says clearly, in Masechah Shabbos Kuf Havdalit, as well as in Beitza Daf Lamed Zayin, the Gemara very clearly states that the reason why there's an Isra of Muktzah is because it's a Gzera Mishum Hotza'a. Because we know that you're not allowed to carry Mishus HaYachid or Rishus HaYachid, or Mirushas HaRabim, Lirushas HaRabim, or, right, different configurations of what you're not allowed to do. And because we're concerned that if you're going to be carrying around various items throughout Shabbos, you're not going to realize, and you're going to walk from one Rishus to another. So because we wanted to put up a gedder that people should not come to violate the Isser Hotzah, therefore we said that there's an Isser of Muktzah, which basically precludes you from touching many of the items that you normally would have carried, your cell phone, your pen, all the different things that are generally in your pocket. So therefore we have an Isser of Muktzah, which helps us save ourselves from the real violation of Hotzah. That is basically what the Gemara says. The problem is that the Rambam, when he talks about the impetus for the Isser of Muktzah on Shabbos, the Rambam all of a sudden gives us a whole bunch of other reasons that are not found in the Gemara. The Rambam writes, number one, says the Rambam, the reason why we instituted a violation of Muktzah is because Shelo Yehei Hiluchach Shel Chol Ki Hiluchach Shel Shabbos. We know one is supposed to act very differently on Shabbos than they act during the week. And you're supposed to have, hilucha is supposed to be different. The way you go about the walking on Shabbos is supposed to be different. Well, says the Rambam, if hilucha shachol shouldn't be the same as hilucha shachabbos, well then certainly all the things that you handle on Shabbos should not be the same as the things that you handle during the week. And from that the Rambam learns that we have an institution of muktzah. Then the Rambam says the second reason is because maybe if you're going to pick up any of these items, you're going to come to violate a real Isser. If you're going to pick up a hammer, if you're going to pick up a screwdriver, then you're going to come to do something with that hammer or screwdriver, which you're not allowed to do. Another idea the Rambam gives. The third idea the Rambam gives, which is a very original and interesting idea, that the Rambam tells us that we need that everyone should have a Shvisa Hanikaras B'Shabbos. So says the Rambam, we know that we have a din that on Shabbos you have to rest. So what if I am the person who sits at home all day and I don't have a job and I never go anywhere, I sit in my house all day long, I'm retired, and I have nothing really to do. So how are you going to notice that today happens to be Shabbos over and above any other day of the week? It's not that today I'm staying home and during the week I go to work. It's not that today I'm not turning the TV on and every other day I do. I never turn the TV on, I just sit home all day and read books. That's what I do. So how are you going to tell that today is Shabbos? Well, says the Rambam, because we need to have a Shvisa Hanikaris, we need to make it that Shabbos is noticeable in your house. The way to do that is that even for the person that never works throughout the week, the way we're going to do that is by instituting a violation of Muktzah. And we're going to watch you, that even though throughout the regular days of the week, you're going to be handling all sorts of items, on Shabbos, you're going to stop yourself, you're going to hold yourself back from handling the regular items that you would during the week. Rav Soloveitchik took this Rambam a step further, and he said, well, if we need a Shvisa HaNikeres, the whole way that we set up Shabbos has to be different than the way that we set up during the week. So Rav Soloveitchik was very opposed to those who have a Shabbos meal not at the time that the Shabbos meal is supposed to be eaten. Take, for example, I know there's a shul in Manhattan where they have a shir after the davening on Friday night for an hour during the winter months. Why? Because people are used to eating not before 6 o'clock. In the winter months, when you start davening at 4:15, 4:20, people are going to get home at 5 o'clock, whatever it is, 5:05, 5:10. What are you going to do from 5 o'clock to 5:10? I'm not... From 5 o'clock to 6:30, when I normally eat dinner, I'm not hungry. So they have a shir on Friday night after davening in order that people will be able to schedule their meals the same time that they would schedule them during the week. And Rav Soloveitchik felt that that's an inappropriate practice. He felt it's not right. Because the Shvisa HaNikeres on Shabbos, Shabbos has to be totally different. And you eat the meal when you get home from shul. It's not a time to try to space out our meals and have them the exact same times as we have them during the week. We have to have a totally different atmosphere in our homes on Shabbos, which includes the timing of our meals as well. Now the Prima Gadim points out, why is it that the Rambam made up all these other ideas? How come the Rambam didn't just stick to the very simple, basic idea that the Gemara tells us, that the reason why Muktzah was instituted is because of Hotzah? Why does the Rambam feel a need to add any more reasons than that? Says the Prima Gadim very simply, well, what's going to be on Yom Tov? As we know on Yom Tov one is allowed to carry outside. And we paskin like Beisilim, mitoch shehutra hotzah letzorech, since we paskin that one is allowed to carry not only those things that are essential, but even other things that are not as essential, so therefore, what's the Gemara going to say? How come there's a violation of Muktzah on Yom Tov when we know that the violation of Hotzah, the Isra of Hotzah, is really not as applicable as it is on Shabbos? So to that, the Rambam has to say, well, we got to come up with new reasons. So what are the new reasons? Either because Shvisa HaNikeres, or because we want to make sure you don't come to violate a different malacha, but you cannot only rely on the reason of Hotzah. That's the way the Prima Gadim explains what compelled the Rambam to come up with new ideas, new reasonings, as to why the Isra of Muktzah applies not only on Shabbos and to Yom Tov as well. So now, let's learn through the Hakdama of the Mishneh Berurah to Hilchos Muktzah. And this Hakdama is a very uncharacteristic thing of the Mishneh Berurah to do. It's going to take us a while to read through, but the Mishneh Berurah in Siman Shincha says, well, you know, Muktzah is a very overwhelming kind of sugya to learn, and therefore he's going to set up all the categories of Muktzah. In order to make it less complicated, he's going to set up the klalim, the general rules of Muktzah, and then we'll go into it in greater detail maybe next week or the week after. But here, let's just get down the rules clearly, what the Mishneh Berurah states for us. So let's read together. Says the Mishneh Berurah in Siman Shinches, this is the introduction to the Siman. So again, the Mishneh Berurah generally is commenting on something the Shulchan Aruch said. Over here, before the Shulchan Aruch says a word, the Mishneh Berurah is already setting up the whole sugya for us. So he writes as follows. Hinei, kodem shenevar siman zeh, before we get into the detailed description of everything about the halachos of Muktzah, akdim psicha katana. I'm first going to give a hakdama, an introduction, in order that we should have an understanding as to what we're dealing with when we talk about Muktzah. Hinei, says the Mishneh Berurah, Isur Tiltul Muktzah, Shegadru Chazal, this institution of Muktzah that Chazal instituted, Kasav HaRambam, the Rambam tells us in Perak Chavdalet and Hilchos Shabbos, Asru Chachamim L'Taltel Miktzas Devarim B'Shabbos, Kederach Shehu Ose B'Chol. So that the Rambam tells us, the Chachamim said, you are not allowed to handle everything the same way you handle it during the week. Says the Rambam, Umepnei Ma Nagu B'Isur Zeh, why is it that the Chachamim instituted this violation of Muktzah? Amru, they said the following. So here you have, the Mishneh Berurah is quoting the Lashon of the Rambam, where the Rambam seems to go totally out of the ballpark. He's coming up with new reasons that the Gemara never said, as we just stated. Says the Rambam, Uma im hishiru hanaviim vitzivu shelo yavo hiluchach b'shabbos ki yiluchach b'chol. If the Nevi'im told us that we shouldn't have the same mannerisms on Shabbos as we have during the week, below sichas haShabbos kesichas haChol, we shouldn't have the same conversations on Shabbos that we would during the week. Shenemar v'daber davar, we're not allowed to talk about business on Shabbos. We're not allowed to talk about many things on Shabbos. Kal v'chomer, says the Rambam, if we have to be careful with the way we speak and the way we walk and all the mannerisms, then certainly shelo yehi tiltul b'Shabbos ketiltul b'chol. Then certainly one has to be careful not to handle the same items during the week as they handle on Shabbos. Kedei shelo yehi kechol kiyom chol be'enav. Says the Rambam, what are you going to do? You have off on Shabbos from work. So you're going to be moving all the boxes that you didn't have a chance to move during the week. Well, Shabbos is going to be the great time to do it because you're off from work anyway. Says the Rambam, no, no, no. Shabbos has to be different than during the week. And therefore they said that they were going to institute a violation of Muktzah because this falls under the category of a Dabra Dabra. The same way you have to have a different speech on Shabbos, same way you have to have a different way of walking, different mannerisms, everything's different. Well, so too the way you handle items on Shabbos has to be categorically different as well. Now, says the Rambam further, Shaharehu Batel V'yoshe Bebeso, a person is sitting at home, bored on Shabbos, so to speak, V'yavakish Davar Siyasasikbo, and a person's going to be looking around the house, what can I do today to keep myself busy? V'nimtza Shalosh Shabbos. So the Rambam here tells us another idea. Because you're going to be bored on Shabbos, you're not going to know what to do. So what are you going to do? You're going to find all the things that you don't really have a chance to do during the week. You're going to clean up your house. And it turns out you're not really going to rest on Shabbos because you're going to be so busy putting everything away and, you know, organizing all the boxes in your basement that you don't have a chance to do during the week. We are told that on Shabbos one is supposed to rest. And if you're going to be busy doing everything else, you're not going to end up resting like you should. The Ode says the Rambam. He goes further. If you're going to go and carry your cell phone, or you're going to carry a hammer or a screwdriver, while I happen to be handling my screwdriver and putting it away into the hardware box, into the drawer, oh, I'm going to pass by a screw that happens to be loose, or I'm going to be sitting at the table, I'm going to say, oh, that chair really wasn't as strong as it should be, I better tighten up the screws, says the Rambam. Well, that's going to be a real malacha. And the way to stop ourselves from doing that is to make sure that we don't touch the hammer or the screwdriver at all. The Ode. The Rambam is not done. He says another reason. Bifnesha miksa sa'am enam bali umnius, says the Rambam. There are some people, believe it or not, who don't have a job. Ela bitalim kol yumeyem. Now we're not talking about people who are retired. People who are retired find something to do. The Rambam is talking about people who are bitalim kol yumeyem. The mamish have nothing to do. Sitting on the couch all day long. Nothing to do. Kigon atayalam v'yoshvei kronos. The people, I know nobody here has a concept of yoshvei kronos. I grew up in Washington Heights. If you ever visit Washington Heights, you really know what yoshvei kronos means. There are people who just sit on the corners and do absolutely nothing. All day, all night. Any day of the week. So you really have a deep understanding of yoshvei kronos. If you want to take a visit, you really understand. So the Rambam says, if you're one of those people, it's not the YU guys, all week long they're not working, they're sitting around doing nothing. If you're going to tell me that everything on Shabbos is the same as every other day of the week, says the Rambam, there is nothing recognizable for that individual that's a Yoshvei Kronos that does nothing all week long. How is he going to show that Shabbos is different? How is he going to highlight the fact that Shabbos we don't act the same as during the week? Therefore, says the Rambam, Lefikach Shvisa Bedvarim Elu, He Shvisa HaShavet L'Chaladam. Therefore, we instituted a violation of Muktzah, which is going to make uniformity on Shabbos. Any home that you walk into on Shabbos, you'll notice they're not holding a cell phone. It's noticeable. And because we see that nobody's holding a cell phone, we know that even if you're the kind of person that normally does nothing, we know that Shabbos is going to be a different day of the week for you than it would be any other day. And therefore the Rambam sums it all up and he says, because of all the above reasons, that is what the Rambam writes. Just to remind everybody, we're still in the middle of the Mishnah Berurah's Psicha. Here he just started off saying all the list of reasons that the Rambam gives, and now he's going to go further. And then he comments that the Ravid nasan tam shehu geder lahotzah. The Ravid says the simple understanding. The Ravid is not the one who's Mechadish. The Rambam is Mechadish. The Rambam is giving all these other reasons that we don't find in the Gemara. The Ravid is just going simply, like the Gemara says in Shabbos Kuf Chav Dalin, that the real reason why they instituted Muktzah is because Egzeira Atu Hotzah. So here he quotes the Ravid, Shem Natir Letalto Kol Daver, if we're going to allow somebody just to carry and handle anything, Yavo Al Yudei Zeh Gam Lahotzi Mershus Hayachad Mershus HaRabim. He will come inadvertently, but he will come also to carry something in his pocket from the Rishus HaYachid to the Rishus HaRabim and violate the real violation midaraisa of Hotzah on Shabbos. Vida. Dimikan ad sof simen shin yud beis. So from shin ches to shin yud beis, nizbar dalet chalakim shal muktzah. So here the Mishnah Berurah points out that there are four categories in muktzah that are going to be discussed in Shulchan Aruch. And here he lays out the categories, which makes it very easy for us once you see it in advance. So the Mishnah Berurah says, category number one, Chelak Echad, is Mukta Machmas Chiseron Kis. Which means, Mukta Machmas Chiseron Kis, says the Mishnah Berurah, Dehainu, Kli Sha'adam Makbid Alav, Shalo Yifgom Vishalo Yiskalkin. Let's stop here, if you want to make a little line so you know where to pick up in a few minutes. But the first category that he has is Mukta Machmas Chiseron Kis, which means something that I'm afraid is going to get destroyed, is going to get ruined if we're going to handle it. Now, this mukta we consider to be the most chamer mukta of all these categories. Mukta machmas chisaron kis is something I really don't want people playing with, I really don't want people handling. For example, the example everybody gives is if I have a violin. Violin is not something that I want anybody playing with. It's a very important instrument, it's very expensive. That is mukta machmas chisaron kis. Or for example, the Shmir Shabbos Kochasa writes, if I'm a doctor and I have prescription pad of paper in my office, that is mukta machmas chisaron kis. Why? Because I don't want anyone touching that prescription pad of paper. I can get arrested if somebody's going to start writing out prescriptions on my pad of paper. So that would be considered mukta machmas chisaron kis, even though it's only a piece of paper. There's nothing really mukta about it per se, but since it's machmas chisaron kis, I would say that is really considered mukta. Or for example, my passport, the Shmir Shabbos Kochasa says, I don't want my passport being taken by anyone. I don't want it getting lost. It's a very important item to me. My driver's license, anything like that, we assume, is mukta machmas chisaron kis, and you are not allowed to move it at all. Now, what does it not allowed to move it at all mean? Let's say I left my passport on the Shabbos table, and now we're trying to set the table for the meal. So what would he say?
Move it?
No. So kalachayat is a different story. The question is, can I pick it up as is and move it? Answer is no. Because this is the most serious category of mukta machmas chisaron kis, I'm not allowed to pick it up off the table, even if it's the tzorech makomo. Even if I need that space, I have to set the table now. I can't put down the tablecloth, I can't put down the plate. But still, I'm not allowed to move it at all unless I do a kalachar yad, or if I shake the tablecloth, whatever it might be. Obviously, the Shulchan Aruch says in Simon Shin Ches Sif Aleph, that if you have a nachri do it, that would certainly be permissible. The nachri is, there's no isra amir the nachri on something like that. If it's letzarach gufa, letzarach makoma, if I need the space. However, he says, for me, the Shulchan Aruch says, for me to do it, even though I need the space where the item is placed, I would consider that to be a violation of mukta on Shabbos. Okay? So that's number one. Now, Rav Asher Weiss wrote me a letter, actually, this past week. I was with him in Florida 2 weeks ago. We were talking about mukta. I told him I'm about to start a series on mukta, so we were talking about a bunch of different things. So he wrote a long letter to describe some of the different violations and isurim categories of mukta. So I just incorporated some of it here, because first of all, it's new, so it's very exciting. Second of all, because it's not printed, so no one else knows it. And third of all, because I think he really just sets up clearly a lot of very important issues. So let's look at number one, the thing that he writes about mukta machmas chisaron kis. The examples we gave are very obvious ones. Let's say the example of a violin, the example of a guitar, the example of prescription paper, everything like that makes a lot of sense. My passport, those are things that are really important to me that I really don't want anybody handling with in their own hands because it will get ruined or it will get lost. So now the question is as follows. What about regular paper? Regular piece of paper. Without looking at the sheet that's in front of you, what would you say? What could be wrong with a piece of paper on Shabbos? I mean, come on. What's wrong with a piece of paper? What? What's so important? A piece of paper? I don't know. My kids like to color. They're wasting papers and papers every single day coloring. It just happens to be a mazel that the young Israel has so many thousands of papers that I always bring them home for my kids to color on the other side. If not, it would go broke already from the papers that they use. Papers aren't that important to us. So what would you say? I would say papers are mutter. But that's not the case. Look at what Rav Asher Weiss writes over here. And really, he's quoting the Magen Avraham. Okay? Hine kasav ha Magen Avraham. B'shem ha-shulta gibor. The Magen Avraham quotes from the shulta gibor. Are we not together? Number base. Good? We'll get back to the Mishnah Berurah soon, but I just want to digress about mukta machmas chisaron kis first. Hine kasav ha-magen Avraham. B'shem ha-shulta gibor. The Magen Avraham writes from the shulta giborim. Da'avi mukta machmas chisaron kis. That to handle paper on Shabbos is considered mukta machmas chisaron kis. V'chein kasav b'shulchan aruch harav. B'maruktsia uvin Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah writes that to handle paper on Shabbos is mukta machmas chisaron kis. Now again, we're not talking about the newspaper. We're talking about a blank piece of paper. Oh, so 1 second. So we'll get to nowadays in a second. If you still have questions, we'll answer them. Ach Epsher. So now Rav Asher Weiss is ad-libbing, and he says, Ach Epsher, should be made kedem back in those days, it cost a lot of money to buy paper. I know my father grew up in the age, which was a lot before my age. My father, when he writes a shir, I don't know if you've ever, my father leaves his notes all over the place, so people have seen it. But when he writes up a shir, which normally happens in the car on the way to the shir, so he'll just take some scrap paper that he has in his pocket, you know, the back of something else, a meeting that he had or whatever, and he scribbles a few things and that's it. He will never waste a piece of paper. And I'm always like, Daddy, I'm happy to buy you a pad of paper. But, you know, to him, paper is very worthwhile. To us, I think in our generation, many of us probably are more used to wasting paper than those who might be a little bit older. V'ha'aniyas ha'isa gedola. Back in the days, people were not as wealthy as we are. V'lo ha'isa ta'asiyah mufutachas. V'lo kein bi'amenu. And then they used to have very quality paper. It was much thicker than it is now. Now we have recycled paper, and it's not so expensive, the paper that we have. V'lo kein bi'amenu, not in our time. Shadaf nayar eno shavya afilu karav l'shava pruta. It's not even worth, one piece of paper is not even worth a penny. It's worth nothing. Ach mikol mokom ein ha'derech lasos b'shimush acher. However, he says, even though paper is not so expensive, in the end of the day, we only use paper to write on or to color on. Hare barur, dechol shimush acher mekalkulus hanayar. If I'm going to use the paper, even though it's not so expensive, in the end of the day, if I'm going to use it for another purpose, it will get ruined, and I won't be able to use it for its purpose. Vishuv ein aray leksiva. So this is why he's bothered. On the one hand, he says, how can you call that mukta machmas chisarkis? That's not like a violin. And maybe in the olden days, the Mishnah Berurah, the Magen Avraham, maybe that's the way it was, because paper was expensive. They really valued paper. But nowadays, when paper is so cheap, how do I define that as machmas chisarkis? That really doesn't cost me anything. At the same time, he says, if we know that paper is set aside for one purpose and one purpose only, well then if I'm going to use it on Shabbos, let's say, for any other purpose, let's say to put... There's a pot that's a little bit dirty underneath. So you take a piece of paper, you're going to put it there so that you don't get the table all dirty when you put the pot down. So he says, now you're ruining what the paper was really made for. So maybe that is considered machmas chisaron kis, even though it's not so valuable to you.
Say about anything.
Yeah, so let's hear. So say about anything, 1 second.
And therefore, everything is going to be falling into this category.
Why?
Because if anything could be used only for one specific purpose and used like, for something else.
I was trying to think, what's another example? You think about it.
Your kids.
What?
Your coat,
yeah.
You're only to keep you warm.
Right.
If someone's using
No, but the problem with paper is the only way to use it on Shabbos is to do a malacha to use it.
No, but
right? So just 1 second, then we'll get to the question. Again. Paper, the only way to use it is to do malacha with it, to write or to color. So you're not allowed to do that, but that's what paper is made for. Uh-huh. Now you want to know, can I use the paper for something else? Yeah, your question?
No, but bedavka, first of all, because the paper is so worthless.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So what is the difference, you know, whether it's a piece of paper or, you know, you could say that if you put a rag underneath or a towel that you'd have to wash it, it could cost you more money to wash it than that piece of paper cost you. You can buy a ream of paper for
so that's what he's asking. Let's read a little further, and then I think it will crystallize exactly what you're saying, where he says the tut studum. Let's keep reading. Then he says as follows. There are three opinions of our generation as to what the status of our paper is. Rav Moshe Feinstein says, the gam is manen avi muksa, machmas chisaron kis. Rav Moshe writes, even the paper is muksa also. Now you'll say, well, Rav Moshe was still 50 years ago. What? Can't be relevant.
The change over 50 years, over 25 years. Look at what you just said about the Young Israel.
Mm-hmm.
All the sheets of paper that are hanging around.
Right.
Anything.
Correct. Okay, let's keep reading. So Rav Moshe says, but again, you're right. It might not be indicative of our Shaila now, because now we don't treat paper as seriously as Rav Moshe treated 50 years ago. Nobody in their right mind says Rav Moshe would ever use a piece of paper for anything but coloring and writing. And therefore he says, it's muksa machmas chisaron kis for you to use it for any other purpose on Shabbos. The Shevet HaLevi, who was really a contemporary of Vosner, says Kasab to New York, Siva Bismanazah Habi Kiklisha Malachdala Isr. We didn't get to that category yet, but he says, well, you can't call it Machmas Khisaran Kiss, it's not really that expensive, but it's like a screwdriver. It's like a hammer. Once you carry a piece of paper, maybe you're going to come, the next step is you're going to pick up a pen. So that's a klisha malachta l'isra, that's where you're not allowed to handle it. We'll get to that in a few minutes. B'shmir Shabbos Kachasa, he quotes from Shlomo Zalman, which really seems to most of us would be the most sensible opinion. The Kivan Sheino Ome Davka L'Ksiva. We use paper for lots of things today. Habi Kemalachto Leheter Ve'enu Mukta Klal. So Shlomo Zalman is of the opinion that, what are you talking about? Paper is not Mukta. We have paper all over the house nowadays. We use paper for everything. So what are you saying? First of all, it's not machmas chisaron kis because it doesn't cost money. Second of all, it can't be klisha malachta this, or it's not a hammer. What do you mean? A hammer, we know what you use a hammer for. A paper, when you look at a paper, you always think of a pen? Not always. There are many things you do with a paper. And therefore, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is of the opinion that it's not aser at all. Achla nias daiti. Now, Rav Asher Weiss comments on this disagreement. Achla nias daiti vaday lo mistaver lomar dehavi malachta leheter. He has a mistake here. Yeah, I think it's a printing mistake. This was a letter that was written very quickly. I think he made a mistake here. Achla niyas daiti vaday lo mistaver lomar dehavi malachta leheter. The sof pashut sheniyar zeh omed aksiva. How can you say this is malachta leheter? The only thing we use paper for, even bizman hazeh, says Usher Weiss, is to write on it. And therefore he says, v'rov rubo meshamish leksiva, and most of the times, yes, once in a blue moon you're going to use it for something else, but most of the times when you use a piece of paper, it's to write on. U'pashut ha'avi malachta le'iser. V'ad kan ein lehistapik elehim havi mukta machmas chisaron kis kemivur. And now, he's not sure whether or not it's considered a mukta machmas chisaron kis or not. A blank piece of paper, yeah.
Yeah, because if it's already written on or whatever, we're not talking about
it. So, meaning you could read it. I mean, you're allowed to read a newspaper, you're allowed to read a book, right, that's for sure.
So you're not going to write on top of something. Sort of
correct.
Thing.
Okay, so now let's just...
copy things with paper. Copying, I mean, if I have a stack of paper in the office, it could be 50-50 writing. Like, oh, you're using it in the top, someone's putting it on top.
Well, that's also a malacha.
That's the same thing. I mean, it's everything.
Yeah. Now let's just finish what he says. Vani lik sha'atzmi, mesupik bazeh. And I'm not sure, he says, nowadays, what do you say about paper? V'sharash ha-sha'ela begeder mukta machmas chisaron kis. He says what it boils down to, and I think this is what all of us are trying to get at, but he just says it nicely. Sharash ha-sha'ela begeder mukta machmas chisaron kis. The question we need to ask ourselves when we talk about this category of mukta machmas chisaron kis is, hayim tzarech davka hefsid mamon? Do I need that it should actually be a loss of money like the violin? Is that what qualifies something as mukta machmas chisaron kis? Ukilashona muksimachmas chisaron kis oshema, or perhaps ein hadavar tali ela behaksas hadas. Muksimachmas chisaron kis is just a code word for saying something that I want to be set aside for one purpose and one purpose only, like my violin. Not that it costs me so much money, but that I want it to be a violin. And if someone's going to be playing around with it, it's going to get ruined, then it won't be able to be used as a violin anymore. And the same would go for paper. That's what he's mesupik about, and I think that's what all of us are trying to say. How do you categorize, how do you classify this understanding of mukta machmas chisaron kis? Does it mean that it actually has to cost me money in order to be in that category? Or do we say it's mukta machmas chisaron kis even if it's just something that's set aside for one purpose and one purpose only, and I don't want anything to happen to this item that would disqualify it from being used for that purpose? Very important question. Yeah?
What's the difference between a hammer and paper?
Let's hear.
Ask me, like, everything's the same thing.
That's what they're all saying.
There's a, but a hammer, you would say, cream lock to lesser.
Yeah.
As opposed to chisaron kis, I would say, based on this, you know, if we're saying the paper's going to...
Because a hammer, if you hold a hammer on Shabbos Yom Tov, it's not going to get ruined. Right?
I mean, if you hold a piece of paper also.
What do you mean? A piece of paper gets bent very easily, so it gets ruined very easily. If you handle a piece of paper, you just careless with it, it's going to get ruined. Hammer's not like that. So a hammer is a klisha malachta l'iser because you're going to use it to do something you're not allowed to do. Piece of paper, the shayla is maybe it's muksa machmas chisaron kis, but to that the argument is, but I don't care if it gets ruined, so I'll just throw it out.
So you're saying only things that are fragile? That's what we're talking about?
That's the question. How do you figure out what muksa machmas chisaron kis actually means? Yeah.
Well, if you hold like the first opinion of Professor Weiss that it's whether it's going to be hefsid mamon, that's subjective.
Oh, so now that leads us straight into the next point. Go to the next. It's part of the same letter, but I just didn't want to go through all the gory details in between, so he goes like this. Oh, he says, Yesh lehistapik im tali b'das kol echad. Exactly what you're suggesting. Do you say that this is subjective and each person has the right to decide and figure out what is considered muksa machmas chisaron kis? Yesh la'ayin. He says, I'm not exactly sure. Im halacha zu tliya b'kpeida shabal hakli, o shema azlinan basaro b'nei adam ulefi minog hamakom. Do I go based on each person's subjective opinion of what is valuable to them? Or do I go based on public opinion, what we consider to be valuable? Everybody agrees that a violin is very expensive and valuable. Not everybody agrees that a piece of paper is important. Hine kasama Mishnah Brura. So he quotes the Mishnah Brura here in Sifkat and Vav. Shemakpidim alav. He's commenting on what the Shulchan Aruch says. Anything shemakpidim alav, that we are careful about it. What does the Mishnah Brura explain in those words in the Shulchan Aruch? Imhu eino makpid lohavi lididei mukta machmas chisaron kis. So what does that mean? Lohavi lididei. Sounds like each person has the right to figure out whether or not this is considered mukta machmas chisaron kis to you. Ve'ayin od b'Yeshuas Yaakov. Shatchila nistapik vazeh. The Yeshuas Yaakov has the suffix. He's not sure if it's subjective or not. V'shuv kasav. And in the end he says, demistavar detalibo. V'kasav shekach mavur belavush. So Rav Asher Weiss writes after a whole lengthy discussion there in the letter about why he feels this is the case. La'anias da'iti tzarachim bazeh. He doesn't agree with this assumption. Dilmavad ma demistavar shedin zeh bechlal dine mukta eno tali v'das kalecha ve'echad. You can't say that we're going to figure out muktzah based on every individual person. Ela azlinan basardas rov b'nei adam. Shebechol makom uvechol zman. Each community is going to have to figure out, obviously, in I don't know where, but these countries where a piece of paper is the most heiligazach in the world, where it's the fanciest item they have in their house. Okay, we're not talking about that. You have to figure out according to your kind of community. B'chal makom b'chal zman, and then in the end he ends off. K'talmud katan hadan lefnei rabosav agdolim mekarka nira diruach acher ha'isa b'kirbo. Right, so Rav Asher Weiss here confesses that he agrees that he's disagreeing with the Mishnah Brura, and he's taking on the Yeshuas Yaakov and many gedolei acharonim who say that it is subjective, but he says he really doesn't understand. He brings rayas, but we don't have a chance to go into everything. But he feels that it's not a possibility to say that this is just going to be subjective and everyone has the right to decide for themselves whether or not they want to consider something to be muksa or not. Yes?
You can make the point that if you hold this up, there's no watermark on the paper we use. That means it's very cheap.
Okay.
20 years ago, 30 years, 100 years ago, paper had different kinds of watermarks in them so that you could rate the value of the paper.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that has anything to do with this, but
I think it has a lot to do with it.
Okay.
I think it has a lot to do with it because that's the question. To us, this is not expensive.
So
to us, it's not valuable.
Okay, that's the point. Not expensive. It has no value to it.
Right.
So then what's the muktzah part?
So how can you say that's muktzah machmas chisaron kis if it really doesn't have so much value to me? And to that, Rav Asher Weiss says, you have to figure out, when we say this category of muktzah machmas chisaron kis, does it mean value monetary? Or does it mean that I buy the piece of paper because I need paper in my house, and I want the paper to be there when I'm going to need it? And the question is, even though it might not be so valuable, but still, in the end of the day, if I use it for another purpose, it's not going to be there when I need it for the purpose that it was bought.
Yeah, but you combine a case of this paper for what a half a ream of properly watermarked paper cost.
Correct. That's what he's saying. Maybe it's not about the value monetarily. Maybe you have to judge this category differently, which I think... I'm putting it out there just that we should think about it. I think it's an interesting... I'm not saying right or wrong. I think what you're saying is very relevant, and it's relevant to the whole discussion, but it just opened up for me a little bit of a question about how to really figure out what it means, mukta machmas chisaron kis. It's a question I never thought about before I saw this, but I think it's an interesting question nonetheless.
To that extent, can we just aim off on this? If you say about glasses or watches or anything, let's say you have a pair of glasses you only wear in shops,
look, you know that if your glasses break on Shabbos, you would put on the weekday glasses, right?
Right.
So it's as if, even if you have, let's say, for example, we'll get to it in a few minutes, I don't know if tonight, but even if you have, let's say, Eitzim Avana V'Yafar, let's say you have something which is totally useless, you have rocks on the ground. So that's considered real mukta. Mukta machmas gufo. You have nothing that you can possibly do with that. That's real mukta. But still, how do the people throw stones in Mei Sharm at the cars on Shabbos? It's mukta. Prepare before. So anything that you have in mind before Shabbos, of course, they think about this. Not the, so anything that you prepare before Shabbos, even if it's Eitzim Avanav Yafra, even if it's the dirt on the ground, even if it's the stones that are real Muktzah Machmas Gufo, you're allowed to throw them out the cars. I mean, you might not be allowed to for other reasons. But you're allowed to use even the Eitzim Avanav Yafar because you set it aside. It was Aktzei B'daito. You set it aside in your mind on Shabbos that maybe if the situation arises, I'm going to need them, and therefore you never blocked it out of your mind before Shabbos started. Okay? Also, you mentioned about that. I think it's, I was once in a car with Rabbi Lau's son, it was Rabbi Lau's son, Rav Asher Weiss, and I was in the back, and we were talking. It was the yahrzeit of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who, Shalom Aleichem, Rabbi Teller. He tells a lot more about Rav Shlomo Zalman than I'll ever know. But one thing that I heard in this car ride was a beautiful story that Rabbi Lau's son told over. I think there's someone in the Knesset, Rabbi Parish, who was very involved in fighting for Kedushas HaShabbos in Yerushalayim for many, many years. And there was a period in history when he was fighting that they should close off all the streets in a certain area in Yerushalayim, that they shouldn't be able to drive through them. He thought that it was disturbing the Kedushas Shabbos of his children, not his, but the whole community's children. He felt they should close and they should cordon everything off. And there was a disagreement back and forth in the Iriyah and Yerushalayim, should they allow it, should they not. Finally, they came to an agreement and they came up with a map, and they showed him everywhere, all the streets that they're going to close, and finally they give the map to Rabbi Parish, and they ask him to look it over and decide whether or not he's happy with all the barriers that they were going to put up. And he says, you know, I got to go speak to Rav Shlomo Zalman. So they said, what are you going to speak to Rav Shlomo Zalman? You've been fighting about this for years and years, and all of a sudden you're going to Rav Shlomo Zalman. He says, no, I have to go ask Rav Shlomo Zalman at the end of the day, because maybe he's going to want us to close off more streets, and I don't know if he's going to be happy with only the ones that you closed off. So he brings the map to Rav Shlomo Zalman's house, and Rav Shlomo Zalman looks at it and he says, are you crazy? He says, what do you mean? He says, do you know that for the Chiloni that is now going to have to walk, drive around further out of their way and create more Chilul Shabbos because of all the streets you're closing down in your neighborhood, now they're going to have to take a detour and be Mechalel Shabbos even more? You ready to take that achrayus on yourself? So when we talk about setting aside the stones to throw in the cars on Shabbos, which is obviously a very important mitzvah, but you should know that Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was careful to think about the Chiloni, and are we going to have more Chilul Shabbos by closing off the streets on Shabbos? It's something that we do have to keep in mind. So anyway, that's a very important point about Muktzah Machmas Chisaron Kis. I think we should all think about it a little and figure out whether or not we agree or disagree. I don't know if there's a right or wrong answer. I just think it's what to consider. Let's move on a little bit. And that is also Muktzah Machmas Chisaron Kis. Let's move on a little bit. Let's go to the next category that the Mishnah Berurah has. We left off in the long introduction that the Mishnah Berurah has about the four categories of Muktzah. I see we won't get through the whole thing tonight, but let's at least finish the next category. Chelek Beis. Dabar she'eno kli v'lo maichel, adam v'lo maichel behema. If you have something which is not a food item, and it's not an item that you need to feed your animals, kagon, avanim, v'kanim, umos, v'eitzim, v'koros v'afer v'chol umeis, abalchai, if you have a dead body, it has no use on Shabbos. Or you have all these kinds of food items that you put on the roof to dry out, and you're going to leave it there for weeks and weeks until it's really dried, so then you have no intent to use that on Shabbos at all. You have nothing that you can use it for. Anything like that, we consider muktzah machmas gufo. This is considered real muktzah. What are you going to do with it on Shabbos? And since when Shabbos came in, you had no intent of using it on the Shabbos at all, therefore we assume it's going to be remaining muktzah for the rest of Shabbos, umiktzah, umikri, and this is the category called muktzah machmas gufo. Then, let's say you have, for example, broken glass, right? So you have a pitcher that breaks, smashes into many, many little pieces. So wouldn't you consider that muktzah machmas gufo?
But on Shabbos, you broke it.
Yes, shouldn't that be muktzah? What use do I have? That's like a mace on Shabbos. What am I going to do with the mace? What am I going to do with the stone? If I'm not throwing it at a car, what am I going to do with this thing? So the Shulchan Aruch says in Siman Shin Ches that any time there's an issue of Pikuach Nefesh, and Pikuach Nefesh doesn't mean you're going to die. Pikuach Nefesh means if it's dangerous, if it's a hazard, so then the Chachamim never instituted Muktzah at all. So in a case like that, obviously when you have the small pieces of glass all over the place, we would assume that that would be permissible to clean up on Shabbos because that is something that is dangerous to leave around the house. Another example is, let's say, sand. So we're told Eitzim Avanav Yafar is considered Muktzah Machmas Gufa. So you're not allowed to just go on the ground and start playing with the things that are on the ground. That's muktzah. But what about my children to go play in the sandbox? So you say, Yetzim Avonu Biafra is muktzah, muktzah machmas gufo. So how am I allowed to handle that on Shabbos? How are my children allowed to go out and play on Shabbos in the sandbox? What do you think? Answer is, that's the same as designating the stones to throw out the cars. Why? Because I know before Shabbos starts that every Shabbos my kids go outside, they play in the backyard, and they play in the sand. Part of the activity on Shabbos is playing in the sand. So the same way you're allowed to designate stones to do a very important thing with, so too you're allowed to designate the sand in the sandbox, which is basically, you don't even have to specifically designate it, but it's clear if every Shabbos that's what my children like to do, that's considered designated already. Yeah. Yes, I don't. Again, if we're talking about something which, let's say, you have the fruits drying on the roof and it's going to be there for 6 weeks, so then you have to designate it, really designate it. But if you're talking about the sand, that we know that this is what children do on Shabbos, so then that's considered like it's designated already, and one would not have to go out of their way to designate it specifically. Then we come to the third category of muktzah, which is a kli shemalachta le'iser. For example, we talked about the hammer, the screwdriver, things of that nature. So we assume a kli shemalachta le'iser. What is the halacha regarding that? So we know that that is permissible to carry that letzarach gufo or letzarach makoma. For example, the example everybody gives, which never comes up nowadays, is you need a cracker nut and you don't have a nutcracker. I don't know anybody that cracks nuts anymore. So you need to use a hammer because that's the only way you're going to get it. So letzarach gufo, that's a purpose leheter, or letzarach makoma. You left the hammer on the table. Now I'm trying to set the table for Shabbos and I don't want to have a hammer in the middle of the table. So letzarach makoma, you're allowed to move it as well. It doesn't mean you knock it off the table and have it fall on the ground. Tzarach makoma means you pick it up. Now, there's something called a tiltul arach, which means once I'm already allowed to carry it, you don't have to pick up the hammer and then drop it right next to it. You don't have to put it on the table right next to it. Once you're carrying it, we assume it's a tiltul arach. You're allowed to extend that tiltul and walk until the place where the proper place for the hammer to be is. So you're allowed to put it back in the drawer where it belongs or in the place where it belongs. That would not be considered an extra malacha. Once you have an allowance to pick it up, you are also allowed to continue to carry it until the place where it rightfully belongs. So that is with regard to something which is a kli shemalachta le'isra. One very important discussion that the Mishnah Berurah raises is, should we assume that when you have a kli shemalachta le'isra, which you're allowed to pick up, letzarach gufo or letzarach makomo, is that under all circumstances? Let's say I don't have another nutcracker. So then I'm allowed to use the hammer. But what if I do have another nutcracker, but the hammer happens to be right in front of me? So it's much easier to use the nutcracker as the hammer, which is right here, than to go into my attic and find the other one. Well, the Mishnah Berurah writes, if it's efsher beheter, if you have a way of doing it without violating the kli shemalachta le'iser, then you should really use the heter. And that's something that Rav Asher Weiss questions also. That's a number dalet. We don't have time to read it. But you can read it on your own. That's in the letter that he just wrote also about whether or not we should assume that if it's efsher be'inyan acher, do we have to go out of our way? So Rav Moshe says, well, you certainly don't have to go out of your way to go to the neighbor's house to borrow that. That's too much out of your way. But what about if it's in my house? It's just, it's a little more annoying for me to go and get it. So that's a subject of dispute in the Mishnah Berurah as to whether or not that's an obligation that we have to go that far out of our way. And finally, says the Mishnah Berurah, the final category is Chelek Dalid, is a kli shemalachta leheter. If you have something like a plate, or you have something which is a totally kli shemalachta leheter, we would use it on any Shabbos for anything that's mutter, but munach olav davar muktza. You have something on it which is a dvar muktza. For example, you leave money on a plate on Shabbos. Afilu husru b'Shabbos, even if the money was later on removed from the plate, still, kivin shehaya olav ben hashmasho, since at the time that the onset of Shabbos came in, the plate had money on it and we were not able to use that plate. So even if subsequently someone takes the money off of the plate, we assume that plate will remain as a dvar muktzah because that's what we call a basis ledavar ha'asur. Amir Tashem, next week we'll continue a little bit more. But basically now we have the basic categories that the Mishnah Berurah set out for us, and that is number one, something which is a muktzah machmas chisar and kis, which led us to the whole discussion of how exactly do you categorize that. Then we got into something which is muktzah machmas gufo, like etzim avana biyafra, that have absolutely no purpose on Shabbos for anything really substantive. Then you have the third category, which is a kli shemalachta le'iser, and something of that nature you're allowed to carry the tzarach gufo or the tzarach makoma. And finally, the fourth is a kli shemalachta leheter, a basis ledavar ha'aser, something which is really permissible, just that has something aser on top of it. For example, a plate that has money on it, or if you have the tray underneath the leichter. So even if someone comes later on and takes the Shabbos candles off of this tray, still that's what we would call a basis ledavar ha'aser on Shabbos.
Cassandra. You too.